SEC fans, this is John Crisp from Saturday Down South. Welcome to another episode of the SDS Podcast, coming to you from the iHeartMedia Studio, WDAE in Tampa, 620 AM, 95.3 FM. You can follow me on Twitter, at SaturdayJC. Our guest for this episode is former Georgia quarterback Aaron Murray, but soon you're going to know him as the newest color analyst for CBS Sports Network. Be sure to follow him as well on Twitter, at AaronMurray11. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us, and you'll be very pleased to know that I'm recording this show on West Gandy Boulevard, just a few miles from where your star was born at Plant High School.
Yeah, right in the good old Tampa. Nice hot and humid down there. Coach Wiener doing his thing this year, hopefully in Plant again.
Oh, hot and humid. You know, like most people. Let's get a little business out of the way. This Saturday Down South podcast is brought to you, as always, by our friends at Ticket City. College football is quickly approaching. Some incredible matchups in the SEC right down the pike. Alabama, Florida State, Michigan, Florida, Georgia, and Notre Dame. I know our guest is looking forward to that one. I am going to that game and cannot wait. Now is the time to get your tickets. We've been working with Ticket City for a long time. They are the experts in the field, serving over 1.5 million customers at this point. They've been the place to go for 30 years, and now they're offering $20 off for all of our podcast listeners. All you need to do is go to TicketCity.com, enter the discount code SDS20 at checkout, and you're going to get $20 off your order. Again, TicketCity.com, discount code SDS20. And now Aaron Murray. Now, you've been on a little bit of a media blitz lately, although I'm guessing the questions are a little bit different now than they were maybe this time a year ago.
Yeah, a lot different now. Now it's now I'm the analyst. Now I, got to know a lot more stuff. You know, before, just kind of growing up and obviously going to Georgia, it was all SEC football. So I knew a pretty good amount about coaches, players, schemes, all that kind of stuff. And now I have to know everything, especially this year. I'll be covering a lot of games in the Mountain West Conference, so it's learning a whole new conference, the history, the rivalries, the players, the coaches. So it's been a fun process this summer, trying to get rolling with that, and just getting used to kind of just being in front of the camera. It's going to be something new too, without a helmet on.
Well, with a face like yours, you're going to do just fine. I wouldn't worry about it. But I'm curious about your initial transition from player to broadcaster. I'm sure both somewhat were at play here, but how much of this decision was based on your playing career in the NFL not really going the direction you had hoped versus these TV opportunities presenting themselves? And you can do quite well in that line of work and obviously not have to worry about concussions, and you can work well in your 50s, 60s, and even 70s we've seen lately.
Yeah, no, this is something I've kind of been preparing for pretty much every offseason. Myself and my team, agents, marketing people, we did a good job of kind of, as a player, you never know when that last year is going to be. You never know when that last play is going to be. So you have to kind of start preparing for it. So every offseason after my first 3 years, I was going to local radio stations, going to local TV stations and shadowing or getting on the radio, getting on the TV, and just trying to do as much as possible to prepare myself for when the time came to hang up the cleats. So it's kind of feeling like that's the time right now. And like I said, we've done a great job of preparing for it. And we got in contact with CBS over the summer when we weren't sure exactly what direction we were going in, and talked to them. And we're lucky enough, very fortunate, that they had the spot for me to kind of plug me in studio and then also with some games. And it's been a great transition. It's definitely a learning curve. It's going to be a little different calling my first game next week, being in the booth. And I'm sure I'm going to be itching to get down there on the field. But it, like you said, it's going to be nice not, having to strap it up too much and go down there and get hit by 320-pound men.
Now, contrary to what I think a lot of football fans realize, when you are an ex-player and you want to make the transition to the other side, doing radio, doing TV, calling games, you don't just hang up your spikes and enter the booth and that's it. Now, there's a tryout process. You have to do some mock type of game calling with various guys, see if there's some chemistry, see if you're good on camera. Obviously, you know the game, but you can't necessarily translate that automatically to a viewing audience. So talk about what the tryout process was like for you personally, the type of people you worked with, what you were good at right away, maybe some things you struggle with and know you need to work on if you're going to be truly good at this.
I think the one for a thing that was fortunate with me is being a quarterback, especially at a major SEC school. You kind of put in the situation a lot of, you know, you are doing media every Tuesday, so you're on TV answering questions, talking. You do a radio show. You do interviews before the game, after the game. So you're kind of forced to learn to be comfortable in front of the camera, to, you know, be able to discuss game plans, your opponent, coaches, that kind of thing. So I've had maybe not reps as calling games, but a lot of reps with, like I said, in front of a camera, in front of a microphone. So those definitely helped out during my years at Georgia. But, you know, this past and in off seasons, just getting in front of as much as possible. And then in this summer, we kind of did some mock games where one of my guys, I'll be calling with Rich Waltz, we kind of sat down and watched one of his games that he called last season. And he called it like he would be calling a game, the play-by-play guy, and I would call it as I'm seen as a color analyst. So practicing like that and getting feedback from our producers about what went well, what, you know, what I need to continue to work on. And then also they sent me a lot of film of guys like Gary Danielson to kind of listen to and just see how he calls the game. Obviously, I'm not going to be Gary. I'm not going to be John Gruden or any of these other color commentators. I have to be myself and be authentic. But just to hear their timing here, when they jump in, the kind of comments they make has definitely been helpful this summer, kind of listening on them.
Now, the Georgia listeners we have to this show are obviously, they're licking their chops, waiting for some between the hedges talks. Let's go ahead and do that. Your freshman year with the Bulldogs, 24 touchdown passes, 8 interceptions. You obviously went right into the college experience, had a lot of success. And I want to sort of compare and contrast that with Jacob Eason, the 5-star freshman we saw a year ago. There were some highlights. I think there were more sort of, you know, there were more valleys than there were peaks, unfortunately, for the young man. Not necessarily unique for a true freshman. 16 touchdown passes, 8 interceptions. But I want the listeners to understand your perspective versus his, because he did not have the benefit of a year to redshirt to learn and watch and get used to a college program. You did. So you graduate high school, you get that extra year to learn what it's like. So your freshman experience is different from a Jacob Eason. And I just want to know that from your perspective, how you think that may have helped you and contrarily maybe hurt him.
I think it was huge, huge benefit for me. And before you brought that up, I was just about to jump in and say the same thing. It's, you know, when you have that extra year to, you know, take the reps in practice against an SEC defense where it's, you know, you throw a pick or two picks in practice, it's not a big deal because you should be throwing picks because you're running an opponent's offense against your starting defense. But you get to learn the speed of the game. You get to feel out, I can make this type of throw in this window. I can't make this throw into this window because these linebackers in the SEC are just too fast, too big, too physical. So you have that trying out period for a year to kind of get a feel for not only the speed of the game, but also you get to learn the playbook better and get more comfortable with the checks, the reads, the entire offense. And when you're kind of thrown into it in there as a freshman, it's kind of, you know, just trial by error. And I thought he did actually a pretty good job for being a true freshman. I don't think he had a lot of help at the offensive line, which definitely, as we all know, it starts up front. And they weren't able to run the ball in between the tackles. They weren't able to then utilize a play-action game, and he didn't have a lot of time in the pocket as well. So I think that's something Georgia is kind of hit on this offseason. I think they've been rotating some guys to try to find that starting five. I think I read either today or yesterday that I think they found their five. They feel good with their starting 5-0 line. And if they can build some chemistry up front and give him some time and then open up some lanes for those running backs, I look for a big jump for him in his year two, because that's when you really see the progression from year one to year two.
Now, here's my elementary evaluation of Jacob Eason, Georgia quarterback, rising sophomore. Granted, I was a scrappy slot receiver who never put on shoulder pads after the age of 17. I was more baseball player than football player. But I see a guy with a huge arm who throws every ball 100 miles an hour. He needs to learn some touch and some timing. Even with little checkdowns and throwing screen passes, he seems to be whistling the ball into guys instead of, you know, learning to throw a little air under the ball or just having a little bit better timing with his receivers. There's something to be said for throwing a catchable ball. And some of that comes naturally. Some of it you need to learn. That was just sort of my evaluation watching his games last year. I'm curious from your perspective what you thought.
Yeah, it's when you don't know an offense completely and say you have a speed cut to the outside, nice little 12-step speed out by receiver, and you're supposed to hit, as a quarterback, hit your fifth step in the pocket and let it rip without a hitch on time. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, let the ball out. When you're uncertain about, you know, not only yourself but the offense, you haven't had a lot of reps, you haven't had maybe a lot of reps with that receiver, you kind of maybe sit on that back foot, you know, so you hit your fifth step and you're kind of waiting to see, okay, is he going to break at 12 yards? Okay, now he broke, but now you're behind. Now that's when you have to rely on your arm strength, and that's when you're throwing it as hard as you can. And one, your accuracy goes down the drain. It goes down tremendously. And two, the ball is not as catchable compared to when you have faith not only in your ability, faith in your receivers, faith in the offense, and the amount of reps you've been given. Then you're able to hit that back foot, rip it before the receiver and you know, makes the break out of his cut. And it's a lot easier catch. It's a lot easier ball. You're not trying to have the muscle in there. So I think for him, it's just trusting his ability, trusting his reads. And I think another year in the offense and practice and getting those reps allows him to hopefully trust himself a little more and just allows him to rip it on time in rhythm where he's not having to hold on to the ball and then try to muscle it when he's late with the throws.
So if you're a Georgia fan and you got a lucky penny and you're going to wish for one thing for this offense this coming year, you talked about the offensive line already, struggled a year ago. Hopefully it's better. The receiving core, I thought, underwhelmed. Also, plus you lose Isaiah McKenzie, goes a year early to the NFL. But if you're a Georgia fan at Sanford Stadium and you can say to yourself, okay, I can fix the offensive line right now, or I can fix the receiving core right now, which one of those two options probably gives you a better Jacob Eason?
I think the offensive line. I mean, everyone knows it starts with, and I think that's what Kirby wants to start with, is with a good running game. And I think the team that Kirby wants to build is very similar to Alabama, where you play great defense. You got a bunch of beasts on defense that are just going to pound offenses. And you got a great offensive line and some big backs that are just going to wear teams down to where you get to the fourth quarter and defensive lines are dead, linebackers are dead, and you're able to just pretty much do whatever you want. So I don't see a Kirby offense, a Kirby Smart offense, even though he's not the OC, a team where it's kind of spread all over the place. I think he wants to pound the rock, and that starts with some big O linemen up front, and that's only going to, you know, bring safeties down, get more one-on-one coverage on the outside, and then those receivers are going to have to step up when they do get those one-on-one chances.
All right, let's spin it back to your career in red and black not that long ago. You were a four-year starter, again, coming off that red shirt, put up some sensational numbers all 4 years as a starter. But I hate to ask you this question since this is our first conversation of substance, but we have to talk about the 2012 SEC title game. It's 32-28. It's the final minute. You're going in for potentially a game-winning touchdown in an upset of Alabama, and you start throwing darts. You hit Tavarus King on an in route, an incredible throw in between about three or four defenders. And then you get up and you hit Arthur Lynch, another throw down the seam. And you are knocking on the door. The clock is running, about 15 seconds left. You run a quick speed out to Chris Conley. If he catches that ball on the money, maybe he dives and hits the pylon. Worst case scenario, he gets knocked out of bounds. You get another snap. But it's tipped at the line of scrimmage. He catches the ball. 3-2-1, game over. How many times have you replayed that series and specifically that last snap in your head in the 5 years since it happened?
Oh, it's been a lot. And then that's, you know, unfortunately, it was such an amazing game that people love talking about it. And it was. And it's something that, you know, someone had to lose the game. And you know, it wasn't a national championship, but it was a heck of a lot better game than the national championship that year. And both of us knew that whoever pretty much won that game would go on to win. You know, beat Notre Dame. But, it will haunt me for a while, or pretty much my entire life. It's just one of those things that it's unfortunate that the ball was tipped and it kind of ended the way it did. It was just, you know, we felt great that whole game. We were actually up, I think, 11 points heading into the fourth quarter. We had a blocked field goal. Alec Ogletree picked it up, returned for a touchdown, and we're feeling great. You know, we're heading to the fourth quarter. We're up. We're playing great. And then they kind of scored a couple touchdowns and got the lead, obviously. They just made one more play than we did at the end of the game. And that's what it was in those type of games where you got two awesome teams. It just comes down to a couple plays that determine it.
Now, you're the quarterback. You, of course, get too much credit in victory and too much blame in losses. But I'm curious if you've had any conversations since with Mr. Conley, as a matter of fact. You can't expect him to do this because in the heat of the moment, he had about a thousandth of a second to realize it. But once that pass is tipped at the line of scrimmage, the best thing he can do is not catch it. Just knock it down. You get another snap. But he's a receiver. It's his instinct to catch the ball and try to make a play. Tell me about the conversations you've had with him, maybe in the locker room after the game, maybe the next week of practice, or maybe even a week ago if you still have numbers and trade text messages from time to time.
Yeah, no, I mean, we all knew, and he, I think he understands that it just was a reaction. He turned around the ball, hit him in the chest, and as a receiver, it's just instincts to catch the ball. I don't think he was, you know, first off, the play wasn't intended for him. It was actually going to be a back shoulder fade to Malcolm Mitchell on the outside, and ball was tipped, and he was kind of just running a decoy route. So in his mind, he's probably not even thinking, you know, there's no chance this ball's coming to me. And he turns around, all of a sudden it's on his chest, and it just, it's reaction, it happens. I don't think anyone blames him. I think if people blame him, they don't understand football. They don't understand what goes on. It just, like I said, it was a reaction. It happens. It's unfortunate the ball was tipped in the first place. But, you know, I think it was Moses coming off the outside, just made a great play getting up there and putting a finger on it.
Okay, I didn't even realize that. I've watched the play 100 times. I like to think I know my X's and O's pretty well, but he wasn't the receiver intended on the target. It looks like he's running, you know, a speed out to the sideline, maybe occupy a corner, and then you get a one-on-one jump ball type situation in the back.
Just with the play call, we just called fades on the outside. So whenever we call fades, our outside receivers, the two inside guys just run quick speed outs.
Right.
They're pretty much not idle. The job is just to hopefully get one-on-one coverage outside and throw a ball that's 50-50. You catch it, you score, you win. If you don't catch it, then we still got two or three plays left to kind of try to put in the end zone.
So all the armchair quarterbacks complaining that you're not throwing the ball into the end zone didn't realize you were throwing the ball into the end zone.
Moses made it. I think it, you know, watching slow-mo, I mean, he got one finger on it and the ball just kind of tumbled straight down. And yeah, it was just going to be, you know, a back shoulder fade, something that we did extremely well at Georgia during my time with the back shoulders. And, you know, unfortunately, we didn't get it that time.
All right, let's talk about a happier topic. I'm sure you're happy to move on. But look at the SEC career numbers at the game's most important position. I mean, they've been playing football and throwing the ball for a long time in this conference. And no one has completed more passes than you have. No one's thrown for more yards. No one's thrown for more touchdowns in the history of this conference. But how much joy do you truly take in that, those raw numbers? Because if you look at some of the names on this list, you know, guys, you have the fifth highest passer rating in the history of the league. The guys in front of you are Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, and Danny Werfel, and A.J. McCarron. That's 1, 2, 3 Heisman trophies, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 national championships. You have all those numbers but don't have those team things. I'm just curious, in hindsight, how you look at your Georgia career, because numbers-wise, you can't be touched, but you didn't get a chance to play in all the big games you certainly hoped for.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's if you would trade, you know, stats for rings, I think anyone, including myself, would take rings. And we came close a couple times, you know, two trips to the SEC championship, one to LSU, and then one to Alabama, and didn't come away with a victory in either one of them. But I, you know, for me, I had an awesome career. I loved it. I was very fortunate to play 4 years at a top university. I got to play with some amazing, amazing players and coaches. And of course, you know, always, you know, in the back of my head, wish that I could take that one play back against Alabama or, you know, win that game, win that championship. But at the end of the day, I sleep extremely well. I really enjoyed my career. You know, if I could trade the touchdown record for a ring, I would. But at the end of the day, there's nothing I can do at the moment.
Now, how familiar with you are you with the movie Field of Dreams by chance, Kevin Costner?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. Moonlight Graham, the Moonlight Graham character that's ultimately played by Burt Lancaster. So I'm sort of equating you to Moonlight Graham when it comes to your NFL career, because you know, that's part of the movie about how Moonlight Graham, he only entered one game. He never got a chance to have an at bat, and that's sort of the dream scenario for the movie. He gets to live that fantasy that he never had a chance to do in real life. You've collected a lot of paychecks from a handful of NFL teams, played in a bunch of preseason games, but you never threw a pass on Sunday that counted. I'm just curious how you digest that.
It's sometimes it's luck of the draw. You know, I've been unfortunate, you know, just having had the opportunity to jump in and get a rep, it happens sometimes, and it's a very competitive league. I mean, these guys are the best players in the world. And I've been behind some really good guys. I mean, behind Alex Smith for 2.5 years, and then Carson last year, who was a tremendous rookie. So it's sometimes it's just, you know, where you end up and the situation you're put in when it comes to the QBs ahead of you and contracts and all that kind of stuff. But it still was fun. Like, you know, I got to play in some preseason games, have a good time, I wish I could have played some more, but it just didn't work out that way for me.
So I covered the Chicago Bears for 6 years, and this is my last question for you. I got to know Jay Cutler a little bit, and he was in the middle, supposedly, of a career transition just like yourself. And he had signed a deal with Fox, and he was going to be one of their analysts in the booth, and everyone was looking forward to what comes out of his mouth on Sundays. But all of a sudden, things happen on the injury front, and he signs with the Miami Dolphins, and he's going to be the starting quarterback there, presumably for the entire season, depending on what happens with Ryan Tannehill. So what exactly are the instructions with your agent? Quarterbacks get hurt all the time in this league. If two or three guys go down in week three of the preseason or week four of the preseason and your phone lights up, what do you tell these folks?
I mean, we'll just have to see what happens when that time comes. You know, right now I'm really enjoying, my gig with CBS. I don't know too many 26-year-olds who didn't go to school for broadcasting, who have done, you know, minimal stuff in the offseason, who've had the opportunity to then jump in and be in studio and then also to get a 10-game schedule. So I feel pretty lucky and very fortunate to be in this situation right now. And I'm just trying to become the best broadcaster I can be. And what happens with football will happen with football, and we'll have to wait and see. But like I said, right now my goal is just to keep trying to get better at this broadcasting thing and see where it takes me.
Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. I know that all of Bulldog Nation is pulling for you, and best of luck with the broadcasting career.
I appreciate it. Thank you, man.
Sure thing. That was Aaron Murray. You can watch him all season long on the CBS Sports Network. Remember to follow him on Twitter as well, at AaronMurray11. And thank you for listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. Special thanks to our friends at WDAE in Tampa, as well as our sponsor, TicketCity.com. If you like what you heard, please subscribe at iTunes and all the other services out there. You can give us a rating as well. Always appreciated. My name is John Crist, and for all SEC all the time, visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.